Welcome back, episode 39 of the Worldwide Knicks podcast. The whole gang's here this time, you know, Omar, Alex, Rafa. Last time you heard from us was on a special appearance episode that Alex and Rafa did. So welcome, guys. Now back to the pod proper. How's everything going?
Yeah, good to have the three of us back, though. Enjoyed that, though. Hope to do a few more of those kind of things in the future. So it was a great time with Jay, so.
Awesome. Yeah, man, I was listening to you. I was like, look at these guys killing it, man. You guys are bringing up Julius Randle without me even being there. It's like I was there, honestly. It really was. So that was so
did
I'm
we
very
represent
excited.
You?
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
we represent you? Yeah, okay. That's
I called
sort of
Rafa
what we wanted
Omar
to hear.
At one point. So
I saw that.
Yeah, you did.
It was like you were there.
I was there in spirit, you know. So Yeah, it's okay. But, you know, let's kind of jump right in. You know, a few things to talk about. Knicks started up preseason. We'll get to that in a little bit here. But I kind of want to start with, Rafa made sure I remember that this is Knicks content day, not media day, content
yes.
day.
Yes, yes.
So a few, first of all, I want to say happy retirement to the illustrious Mark Berman. He will no longer be on the Knicks beat, so he is retired now from covering the team. So, but there's been a lot of talk about the access or lack of access that the team gives to the media. And you've seen Frank Isola talk about it. You've seen Steph Bondi talk about it. Berman talked about it forever. And even like, you know, podcasters, CP and Jonathan Macri have talked about it as well. So I guess starting off, guys, do you think that the Knicks reporters, beat writers, podcasters, content creators have a legitimate beef with their lack of access to the team and to the front office?
Well, I mean, it's a huge question. We've talked privately about it before because, you know, obviously you do your writing as well, Omar, and it's, you know, how people get their information these days is so different, you know. You know, newspapers in their old fashion, you know, are just so out of date now that, you know, newspapers and just media outlets in general have completely changed the way that they deliver their content. And, you know, it's all obviously all online mostly now, but it's all instant news. You know, like you can't just wait till the next day to get your news and see how the game went and, you know, see what's happening with this, that and the other. And, you know, everybody just needs that instant news and the information you can get through Twitter. I mean, all the media outlets are on Twitter as well. You know, if you can get everything for free and just get that instant access, you know. And I even struggle to, you know, some of these kind of the media things like The Athletic that are behind paywalls and things. I always think, you know, they must really struggle to kind of sell subscriptions and things like that to, you know, is their content really that much better than what people can get for free on Twitter, you know? And even, you know, just maybe not reading the full article. I mean, a lot of people just need to know the bones of a story. They don't really need to, I say, read the full thing. And somebody out there on Twitter somewhere will give them that. So I think, you know, it's a really difficult balance, you know, to give the, you know, say the media outlets enough access and, you know, respect the fact that, you know, the times have changed and, you know, people get their information in different ways. So it's a tough one, you know. And yeah, I'm sure there's a little bit of pettiness behind it about things that have been reported in the past that, you know, Dolan or whoever is, you know, not happy about it. So there's a little bit of that, but you know, the way the media works in New York is so different to a lot of places that I think everything's so amplified. And I think that there's all sorts of things going on. I mean, Dolan himself is, you know, part of a media empire. So I don't know. It's a tough one. You know, it's tough to see these guys that have been doing the beat for 20, 30 years and, you know, suddenly they're cut off. But for me, you know, I'm getting the same content I've always got, you know, nothing's changed for me. So it doesn't really bother me at all. But yeah, you see those things changing. It's hard to see somebody that's had a long career suddenly just completely cut off from it all. So yeah, it's kind of, I'm a little bit torn about it as to how I feel. But as I say, it doesn't really cut me off from what I need to know.
I was mentioning to Omar before, to me, being here in Europe watching football and the way things unfold around the teams and everything, teams are very secretive for a long time and been very secretive about what they do and how they work behind closed doors and how they think. It's very rare whether the president or someone speaks to media, and it's when he speaks to the media, it's to the home media. Like, we have the MSG network. It's not only Knicks network, it's more than just Knicks, but example, there are many teams in Europe, they have their own TV channels. Clubs have their own TV channels. That's where people, the fans, get most of the news. Obviously, it's filtered, not the bad news, but even the bad news, they're a bit filtered. And I think that a thing that Leon Rose and the gang are doing is flipping the switch a bit, because Berman, Isola, and all the guys we mentioned before, they always knew everything, always knew what was going to happen. And now they don't. So they're feeling like the things are changing and they don't have the same content as they used to have. So you've seen the last couple of years that the content around the Knicks, especially from Mark Berman, he was the only one that didn't really let the Knicks go, him and Bondi. The content wasn't, well, it was more steering the pot, as people used to say, because it's, I hear this, I hear that. It's not official source. Like, the Knicks were a poorly run team, let's face it. And so everybody wanted their share. Well, the things were leaked. Leak here, leak there, and everything just fell apart internally as well. And now they have, feels like they have a structure, what they want to do, what they want to leak out, what they don't want to leak out. So it's a different situation. I feel like it's a thing to adapt, the content creators and the journalists have to adapt to this way that the Knicks are working right now. So if they want to get access to the Knicks, they probably have to adapt to what the Knicks want from them as well. Because let's face it, we got a lot of shit from media. Alex was saying the New York media is relentless. Sure. It is. And so if you're relentless, you want to know too much and you talk too much, now you know nothing. So it's, I mean, you can call it pettiness, but it's like, let's protect our team. It's because all of the stuff we listened to about Julius Randle last year, most of it is like it's crap.
Who reported it, Rafa?
Yeah. Who reported it? Where's our report from, Mark?
Exactly. Exactly. Look, just look at how many times Ball Sack Sports got into TV with ESPN or something like that.
And here's the funny thing, guys. It's like Bondi and Berman, especially, they're newspaper guys, right? Like, you know, they work for the Post and the Daily News. And I don't have, you know, newsflash, you know, print media is dying or is already dead, you know. So what do they have to do? Their online presence is there, but not great. So they got to get a little sensationalist, a little like, you know, a little spicy take that gets people to click and to read so that they could push the ads, so that they could continue to have a job. That's the business of creating modern content. So the Knicks are looking at it, and they're a very boring team to cover, if we're being honest. Like, they have young guys who never get in trouble. They have a coach who isn't really going to say the wrong thing. They have a president of basketball operations and a GM who's not going to say anything either. He's not going to get in trouble. You have Dolan, and he's off in his own world, but he's kind of taken a step back from that. It's not, you know, ever since the Oakley thing, he hasn't really been out there. So, and then when you look at it from the Knicks perspective, like, why would I make Jalen Brunson available to you or RJ Barrett after the extension when all you're going to ask him is like, how do you feel about not being traded for Donovan Mitchell? You know, and you know, it's kind of like, I get the Knicks aspect there, but you mentioned, Alex, me as like an aspiring writer myself. Yeah. You kind of want to have a little bit of access. So I feel like the media overblows it a little bit. Right. But also, the Knicks are a little bit too draconian with their limitations of access, where only the MSG network is going to interview RJ, or, you know, it's only going to be Monica McNutt and Alan Hahn, who do great work, but you know, I think like they let the taint of somebody like Berman, who's kind of like, you know, looked at as kind of like a caricature almost, stain a guy who works for the New York Times or a guy like Fred Katz at the Athletic, who does a really good job. He's like my favorite beat reporter. I think he covers the team fairly and does a really good job. But we think about Isola and Bondi and Berman, and then it get the team just says, all right, forget it, we're done, you know, we're out of here. But I guess, like, do you think that they should reach some sort of middle ground here where, you know, allowing a Fred Katz to interview Mitch after he extends and you have an exclusive with somebody at the Athletic or something like that? Do you guys think they should do that, or do you think the way they're going is just fine the way it is?
No, I think they do have to find some sort of middle ground. I mean, to be honest, the league might step in at some point and just, you know, they're probably on some sort of contractual kind of, you know, obligations and things like that to a certain extent. And I think, I think they will have to find some common ground. I mean, certainly once the season starts, they'll get more access just to kind of, you know, after game interviews and things like that. And, you know, maybe that's enough to satisfy it. But I just think it's a little bit of, you know, bad PR a little bit in the fact the Knicks are just kind of being a little bit petty. I think there's plenty in there that the media and the content creators and all the kind of modern world can kind of coexist, and they can all get their share of it. So I think they will have to relent a little bit, to be honest, once the season starts, it will all blow over once the games have started. So
right. Yeah, then you have the post game press conferences, you know, that's kind of will be the thing. Should be curious to see how they handle that. Obviously, at large parts during last year, the team wasn't making Julius available when he was dealing with you know, his slumps and ups and downs of his season, mostly downs.
Was it interesting what you were saying about the drama side of it, that, you know, the Nets have taken that completely on now, you know, and they've got rid of Harden, but they've brought on Ben Simmons, and it's just...
They're a much more interesting team to cover. Yeah. I mean, like, if you're a reporter, I'd much rather cover the Nets.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. How is that working for them?
Not great.
Like, we know everything going on. Everything going in the Nets locker room or the surround, everything is known. Like, you don't know anything about the Knicks. It's, to me, they will reach a middle ground, but they will show what type of reports they want to get. They want fair reporting, like you were saying. Fred Katz does it. And to me, what I see is that he has more accessibility than the rest, than the other guys. Like Ian Bagley as
Steve Popper he has pretty good access. Like,
it's like you are fair with us. You know what's happening. You want Knicks for clicks. You create your own stuff. Like, I know it's a little sudden because it's a big change from what the Knicks used to do and what they do now, and so they will need to adjust the Knicks and the reporters especially, because it's freedom. We have the right to know what's happening. It's a private company, so no, you kind of don't. So it's you know what, like, your reporter, but you don't have to know what's happening here in my house. So it's a middle ground that they will reach it.
Speaking on that, let's kind of pivot a little bit to your guys' favorite topic, which is tanking. So I don't know if you guys watched this Las Vegas showcase that had Victor Wembanyama, obviously the big man from France, 7'4" guy, and Scoot Henderson, the guard from the G League Ignite team. These two guys are looking like two can't miss prospects. Wembanyama, in particular, has probably every GM salivating right now. So with these two players, I thought it was interesting from Woj the other day, where he said that there's going to be an unprecedented race to the bottom to get to these two guys. You know, that tanking is going to be rampant to the point where a team might have like 20 games into the season, they might be like, you know, four games under 500 or something like that, and just say, well, we're not going to compete for a championship. Might as well sell off everything we have and try and, you know, cash in on this lottery ticket for this French prodigy. So with that, a lot of people in the Knicks community are advocating or suggesting that the team tank. So I guess, so what's your guys' reaction to that, considering we just had a summer where we just signed Jalen Brunson and the team is capped out, and they were also in the mix to they're in the mix for a lot of win now scenarios. So I guess, what's your guys' take on people advocating to tank for Wembanyama?
Just bottom line, it's not going to happen. So yeah. I mean, from a kind of theoretical point of view, yeah, that's this generational draft, but we hear this every single year. Do you know that last year was supposed to be a generational draft as well? And it's just, you can't run your team like that, that you're always just chasing the kind of golden egg, do you know? And it's you know, the way that the odds are.
Alex, don't let Sam Presti hear you say that, okay? Because yeah. He is always going to try and find the golden egg.
I mean, I'm a math teacher or math, as you would say, Omar. The it's getting a wee dig in there. So I understand.
How would I say?
No idea. You go for it. What would you say?
You want to hear some Portuguese? Professor de matemática.
I prefer that to math. There you go. Right. So. Anyway, so I obviously understand percentages and things like that. So I do get it, but just from a sporting concept, it's just totally. I mean, we've talked. I mean, it was quite a while ago last season that we talked about this. Just from, you know, me and Rafa's point of view, that, you know, from a sporting side of things, this is completely alien to us. That for a start, that you would have even. You know, a draft system to start with, and it has taken a lot of time to get used to over the years, that, you know, this is an option for you. But and I do get it, I really do. And but just, I mean, I could never root for my team to lose for a start. You know, I just can't see it, even if it's for the greater good. It's just something I cannot do. And you know, I would hate to follow a team. I mean, the Knicks were bad for a good few years, obviously, but they were bad. They weren't even trying to tank. They were just bad. Do you know? But I couldn't actually follow a team like OKC or Philly, you know, a few years ago, where it's just like, it's obvious that they're trying to kind of lose. And you can say that, you know, no player tries to lose or no coach tries to lose and everything. But the team was so bad that, you know, it's only going to go one way. And, you know, they were effectively trying to lose. But I think, you know, the Knicks were just bad through. It was just the team was constructed terribly. Do you know, they were actually trying to
win. They were trying to be good, but ended up being bad as a result. Exactly. That is the thing.
Yeah. It was just accidental tanking, you know.
That's even sadder.
Exactly. So, yeah, I find the whole concept depressing. And just from... my whole overall sporting concept, it's just wrong. And I don't care if it, you know, it gives you an extra 2% in the ping pong balls and that. I just don't care. You know, you should always be trying to win. And, you know, I'm sure we'll go on to have a quick chat about Tibbs later, but, you know, we've got a coach that certainly doesn't want to lose. So from that side of things, maybe that's why I've got a little soft spot for him. So. Just to say about the Spurs, actually, the Spurs, yeah, they did effectively tank and were bad enough to get Tim Duncan back in the day, and yeah, they might be doing the same thing again. But, you know, look at their draft picks over the years, why they were so successful. You know, they're all coming from low picks. Drafting well is better than drafting, you know, just at the top end, just to get these top guys. You know, if you can get smart drafting, then it jumps forward the progression of the team so much. You know, just drafting smart is a big thing, you know, and hopefully some of these guys lower down, like IQ and Grimes and Sims even, you know, Robinson, all these guys that, you know, are looking like really smart picks, you know, that's the way to draft, not just tanking. Tanking makes no sense to me at all. So
I got into this conversation on X Twitter with Nickinator on his third account. Poor guy. Other people got involved because of this the tanking thing. It's we did mention it before a few episodes again that for us in Europe the context is different because we have relegations and so teams have to try to win to avoid being relegated to a division below. So it's a different idea here. But if you look at the NBA or North American sports in general, you have the big cities. And the big cities always get the players in free agency and everything else. And there's always, and now with the super teams as well, like we have super teams, so we have the best players surrounding on one team. Like you used to have two players, now you have three great players and another player to help. Like just look at the Golden State Warriors from a few years ago. They won 73 games and they had Kevin Durant. Like that's criminal for the NBA. It's imagine if the league, for example, Kevin Durant went to Sacramento, poor guy. If he went to Sacramento, imagine Klay Thompson went to Detroit. I mean, and Steph Curry stayed with the Golden State Warriors. There are three teams with a great player that can actually make playoffs and fight. So that's what we used to have. You have a super team here and there with older players, but the majority of them stayed alone. Like Luka is staying with the Mavericks and Giannis staying with the Bucks. The only way they would go there is through the draft. Yeah, it's the only way they go there. Like if you ask 20-year-old Luka Doncic or 20-year-old 18 or 19-year-old Giannis when they got into the league, where do you want to go? You think any of them would say Milwaukee or Dallas? No, that's not where they want to go. So the draft right now is the only way the teams, but the smaller markets have to get talent. Because trades, players just say, I want to go to this team to play or I won't play anywhere. So like, okay, you go there or you go there. So you can't even trade for, there's so rare trades. And like, The Toronto Raptors traded for Kawhi Leonard knowing he wouldn't stay. They gamble there. Teams don't gamble there because, we trade for this player for this year and now I don't trade anymore because he's going to leave and we're going to suck for a couple of years because we'll be in no man's land. So it's the tanking is a bigger issue. Obviously, what the Sixers did, it was like, let's tank until we find a player that can carry us. And they get what? 100 first round picks until they got the two guys. Well, the two guys, one of them is still there, the other one left. But it took time for them to build around it. No one wanted to go to Philly. Who were they signing in free agency that would lead them to a championship? No one. Like the Spurs, the greatest players they had was through the draft. No big player went there freely. Like
so I was just gonna say, look at all the players they missed on as well, the Sixers as well. You know,
I was just gonna say the same thing. It's like the process didn't really work because their evaluation was terrible. Like, yeah, they ended up with Embiid, but that was after the whiff they whiffed on Michael Carter Williams, they whiffed on Jahlil Okafor, you know, they whiffed on Markel Fultz, they whiffed on a lot of guys, you know. So and the thing too about it is like tanking then was different than tanking now. You know, back to your numbers point, Alex, it's just flattened lottery odds. So even if you're the worst team, you only have a 14% chance. That's, I mean, I believe before it was like 25% or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, 25. Yeah. So it's just like, what are you doing? Like, what if you do that? You waste a year, you trade away all of your players, and then you end up with the third pick and went in a two-player draft. You know, so what are you doing, really, right? And again, this team is built to try and make the playoffs this year. You know, that's their goal. And honestly, when you really think about it, this is probably one of the most talented Knicks teams we've had in a very long time, just top to bottom. Like, even like the Melo years, there was so much lack of depth and everything that now we're looking at a player like Cam Reddish, who has incredibly high upside. Like, how is he going to even see the floor? Jericho Sims, a high upside big, you know, in certain spots. How is he going to see the floor? You know, so so fans saying, oh, we just got to throw it, you know, burn it all down, try and get this guy. And what people are just kind of like forgetting about, maybe it's because like I'm still scarred by Porzingis, but it's like when you got guys who are over 7'1", 7'2", it's hard. Like Yao Ming broke down quickly in the NBA. Kristaps Porzingis, to that point, we've seen how he's broken down. Like super tall guys, like again, we're over like 7'2" or so. You know, it's hard for them to stay healthy. And you know, it's, you know, I hope his skill set's insane. I mean, the guy could guard the perimeter, he could shoot threes, he could shot block, he has it all. But I don't know. I just don't see the merit of it when you're a team that could probably make the, you know, if everything goes right, make the playoffs and make a run at the playoffs. But it seems to be that a lot of fans are kind of looking that way.
Yeah. Also, try and tell Jalen Brunson and RJ Barrett to tank.
You know, right. Yeah. It's not gonna happen.
You know, we've got guys now that have got the mindset of just total winners and fighters, and these aren't the guys you want for a tanking team if that's the way you want to go. So
to that point, like if you're trying to, even if you say, hey, we want to tank, we have a good chance of getting this guy. He's generational. He's the next big thing. You talk to RJ Barrett, he thinks he's a generational talent. You talk to Jalen Brunson, he thinks he's an all-star talent player. You know, these guys think that they are that guy, you know, because that's just how they're wired, you know. And so that's like an insult to them, to your point, Alex. And it's just so funny. Like people are all like, oh, well, we got to be able to take the next level. Like you don't even know what this team can be with the proper point guard that we have now, you know. And I guess that's a perfect way to segue into our last topic, though, which is kind of looking back at the first preseason game against the Pistons. As we're recording now, the Knicks are playing the Indiana Pacers in their second preseason game. So start off with the new guys. What did you guys think of what you saw from Jalen Brunson and Isaiah Hartenstein?
Looking at the team running with a functional point guard that knows what to do and is not broken down is a relief. I was concerned, and we talked about this, how the team was going to work around the Brunson and RJ and Julius with the ball and wanting to shoot and everything, and even Fournier. Well, Fournier, obviously, it was a preseason game. He didn't play as much, but he took a backseat on creating and having the ball as much. And the shots were spread out between Brunson, RJ, and Randle. So I like that. This is what I liked most in this game. Brunson, man, he's a great pickup. Anybody says. I think he was so lost in this conversation with Donovan Mitchell coming in or not. He was so lost, and he is so, well, you'd show that in Dallas, but he's so talented. He's a point guard. He's the guy we needed, basically. The guy RJ needed, the guy Randle needed. Like, Randle had space to create. He was going one-on-ones. RJ was going into one-on-ones because, well, your point guard is not broken down or Alec Burks. It's different. It was different. It was a preseason game, I know. It was against the Pistons. But I really liked Brunson, the way he controlled the ball, the way he could play off ball as well and be a threat at all times. And it went smoothly. And Hartenstein, he's so different than he offers something so different than what Mitch offers that it's refreshing. Like, you can play teams differently because you have two centers that are so different. Like Hartenstein, what he did is what he does is basically what I remind it reminded me what Sims tried to do last year, just running all over the place. But obviously, he was doing it, trying to do his best, but it was not his perfect space, basically. And Hartenstein, he can pass, he can shoot. We have a big who can shoot, a five who can shoot the three. Sorry, Taj, but, it, you know. And it was really refreshing. I liked him. His energy, even if he feels I saw some plays defensively and even on offense. He looked like a goof. Like what is he doing? But it's energy. He's throwing passion into it, and we need players like that to get other guys involved in the defense and in the game as well. Artensleinj, I think he is a great addition as well, on a different level than Brunson, obviously. But a great addition in that second unit will really take advantage of him, his shooting. And if he's playing alongside Obi, well, Obi, his three-point shooting is well. It from one game, it did not improve as much. That air ball was good, but it's like if he's going to attack the paint, and if your big can move out of the paint because he's a threat from three, it gives more space to Obi to play in that second unit and do what he does best. Or even if he plays in with RJ Barrett in the second unit, or they mix and match, something Tibbs did in this preseason game. I hope he continues mixing the lineups, not just hockey lineups 1 and 2. So can you guys tell I'm happy with these two guys, with what I saw in one preseason game? Can you guys tell?
Back in, guys. He's
I'm
back
scared
in.
Of going way too deep.
Well,
the pain will come. The pain will come.
Like, I watched the first game and I was just, you know, I was like, and don't overreact, don't overreact. But that, you know, Brunson just looks, he just looks so good. I mean, it's as you said, Rafa, it's just having a point guard, a competent point guard. You know, I mean, he's more than competent. I wouldn't say just competent. He's, you know, he pushes the pace, he controls the pace. You know, it's. We don't have a power forward pushing the ball up, a power forward that's not a point guard, you know. I know the game's changed and I know positionless basketball and all that, but still just having somebody just to control everything, to run plays, to you can see him kind of organizing, you can see his kind of passion, his drive, and just keeping the pace up is a big thing for me as well, and keeping the ball moving is a big thing. The ball gets stuck so much last season that, you know, people just try to, you know, ISO, and it was just beautiful to see. And I don't want to overreact, but I'm going to overreact, and it's just beautiful to see. And just having the fact that going into a season, the one position we really don't have to worry about is the point guard position. I mean, when was the last time any Knicks fan has said that? Do you know, we've got Brunson, we've got Derrick Rose backing him up, we've got even Quickly coming in, we've got McBride even behind that. I mean, come on, that's the strongest position on the team. I cannot remember the last time, you know, the Knicks have ever had the point guard position as the strongest position in the team. But just quickly on Hart,
wow.
Whoa.
It's probably in the 70s, you know, when you had Clyde and Earl Monroe. Whiteman. I mean, that had to be the last time.
You know, when we've had good point guards in the past, we've had better players at other positions. But to me, that's the strongest position in the team right now. Yeah. And probably back to Clyde as the last time. But on Hartenstein, I loved what I saw. But to be honest, he's exactly what was advertised. You know, he came with a bit of hype. Pretty different to Mitch, but that's exactly what we wanted last season. Mitch and Noel were just far too similar. Just didn't get enough variety from that position. Mitch and Noel had great rim protection, but they didn't really offer a great deal more than that. So having somebody that gives you other things is just great to see. So it was exciting. So just seeing a center shoot threes is just lovely.
Yeah, for me it starts and begin and it starts and ends with Brunson. It's everything that we wanted. You know, when we were talking about the players that were struggling at times last year, you know, when I would talk about Julius, or when you would talk about RJ going through a slump or Quickly going through a slump or whatever the case may be, you know, all of that is remedied by steady, strong point guard play. And positionless game or not, I don't care. You still need a reliable point guard, and we have one. And I think that, honestly, I know a lot of people were concerned about, oh, there's only one ball. You know, that was like the criticism. It's like, oh, Julius is ball dominant, RJ's ball dominant, Jalen's ball dominant. You know, where's Evan going to get his looks from? Evan, first of all, Evan Fournier is the last person I'm worried about, just because he's a catch and shoot guy. You know, like he's going to he can create when he's playing in FIBA, but more than that, he's going to be kind of like coming off a curl screen shooting the three. And I think this is going to take some pressure off of, you know, point Julius, which is what none of us wants to see, right? And, you know, allow him to get downhill more often. It just gets me excited about the regular season. Obviously, we're not going to overreact about a preseason win against Detroit. Okay, that's not the thing, right? But, you know, you saw glimpses of what this team can be. But I do kind of want to jump into, of the players that are still on the roster from last year, who impressed you, maybe who disappointed you a little bit in that game against the Pistons?
Well, you talk about overreacting. I do want to overreact again about RJ's got 11 points after 6 minutes tonight. So
future all star, baby. Future all star.
A little bit of overreaction.
So
there,
real so. Quick on that, Alex. So Schwinn from the Strickland.
Yeah.
He had a funny tweet about that. He's like, the way you operate with preseason is anything good that happens just reinforces your narrative. Anything bad that happens, it, you know, it's just preseason. It doesn't even matter.
It's preseason, so
That's the truest statement about preseason.
Well, yeah, like when...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's exactly how I felt. The first few minutes of the Pistons game, Randall and RJ... It was just, there was a good few bricks in there. And, you know, RJ was looking a little, I wouldn't say nervous, just a bit tentative. And I was just like, oof, yeah, but it's just preseason. Don't worry about it. And by the end of the game, it was like, wow, you know, he's back. So, and Randall, great second half as well. So terrible in the first half. But again, it's just preseason. So Reddish looked decent when he started. But again, just, the Cam Reddish experience is just very up and down. I mean, you guys know my thoughts about him. I don't mind him as a player, but he's just a player. You know, he's a decent player. I don't think he's any more than that. Robinson, I was really impressed by, to be honest. Again, I'm not a huge Robinson fan, but I thought he was great. He was really, really good. And again, a nice blend with Hartenstein coming off the bench as well. So, starter-wise... Yeah, no, I wouldn't say I was really disappointed by anybody. I'd say starters especially, I think they look pretty solid, yeah. So, but again, the only one I could possibly say was, I didn't think Fournier was great, but I think Fournier needs to just kind of find his role a wee bit with this team. I think... Just watching a little bit of the Eurobasket, I think you realize how much of a different player he really is compared to the role he has on the Knicks. And I think last season he kind of suffered a little bit from that he was just kind of trying to find his kind of normal game a little bit, and he just didn't really fit in a lot of the time with the players that we had. So, you know, he's here to stay, it seems. So, yeah, I'd just like to kind of see... Interesting to see kind of how he kind of fits into this kind of new team, this new roster. So can he kind of adapt his game a little bit? I mean, we've talked about having him off the bench, but it doesn't look certainly at the moment like it's going to happen. I think we kind of predicted that, you know, we'd certainly start the season with him, maybe towards the end of the season, maybe Grimes would kind of push through and kind of take his spot. But yeah, that's one to watch for me.
You were mentioning... Fournier, he was probably the one I would say I was a bit disappointed in. He's the only one who didn't show anything. But you also mentioned playing in Europe and FIBA. So while the other guys were resting or working out at home, Fournier was playing games and going into his he basically had little vacation this year. So it's. What's hurtful with playing in international games. So I think that might be a problem for him this starting this season. If Cam capitalizes on his minutes, if Grimes starts out strong as well, Fournier's he's resting tonight, so clearly he's trying to get into shape again. Yes, he was he had a long season, longer season than most of the other guys. So I'm not calling it a disappointment. I can say it as he wasn't as he didn't show himself as much as the other guys who we were looking at as well. Other than that, I don't see any disappointments. People were probably expecting Obi to score 40 points, but he didn't, obviously. And I like to it's the shout out I need to give is to Deuce McBride. That defensive play was tremendous. It was like we know he can defend, but how many steals were there? Five or six? I mean, six. I know it's the Pistons, and sorry, but it's still the Pistons. People were saying they were going into the playoffs, but hold on. But six steals, that's a lot of steals. Probably he doesn't give anything that Tibbs likes offensively, and if he grows that, it's better. But defensively, well, he's clearly a guy we can use. Clearly a guy we can use. It's well, he's probably what he's going to become, what people wanted Frank Ntilikina to become, a better
That's
version.
He is,
of,
yeah, he's
of Frank.
A defensive stopper. You know, yeah. Obviously doesn't have the length that Frank has. You know, that was kind of Frank's biggest asset. I like how neither of you guys happened to mention how Obi threw up a couple UFOs to start the game.
He just did another one, Omar. I've got the game on the background. He threw an absolute brick there.
He's gotta make those shots, man.
I did mention the 3-point shot he missed the rim. He did it again, so he's clearly
doing
on his shooting.
Man. But he got a dunk, God. Though, so it's okay, right?
He's amazing.
Yeah.
I tweet about it. Quickly's shot selection, he clearly worked on that. Amazingly, shot selection. Hits a three, misses three. It's still the same guy. Work on your shot selection, please. I beg of you.
The quickly giveth, the quickly taketh away, man. That's just the way, that's the Emmanuel Quickly experience.
Can I throw a little grenade in there? I know this is going to get you guys back up a wee bit, but Rose to me is just so much more important than so many people give him credit for. He's just such a steadying influence, I think, on that team. With so many young players, you know, just that experience, that inspiration, that kind of just guy you can go to just finish plays and close games. And I just think, I don't know the right way to kind of say it, but it's just like the way that people over the summer were just throwing him in as a throw in to trades and stuff like that. It was just absolutely insane to me. I couldn't believe it. You know, he's probably over the last couple of years been our second best player, possibly over those 2 years. And it's just it's all been forgotten about, you know, just because of his age. And
he looks great too. He's in excellent shape.
He's amazing shape. Yeah,
it's easier to trade Rose. Sorry, just easier to trade Rose than Fournier.
Do you think
just,
so? I mean, with that contract, Rose has got a big contract.
Yeah, easier to trade Rose. Yeah, but it's 1 year, so it's Rose. He plays well, Fournier.
Over Tom Thibodeau's dead body, will Derrick Rose be traded? First of all, guys, but yeah, I just have to echo you guys' sentiments. Deuce to me was just jumped off the screen, you know, defensively, kind of starting up the break from the defensive intensity there. Cam is, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like he has it, you know, and I feel bad for him because he's under a lot of pressure to perform when he gets out on the floor, and it just hasn't really been working. An injury, of course, you know, that he sustained there in the first game. But yeah, I mean, I liked what I saw from McBride. Loved what I saw mentioned already from Hartenstein. I liked Julius in the second half a lot. You know, he was kind of getting, getting downhill, getting to the basket. I think he has to kind of like, break out of those tendencies from that he developed last year of having to ISO and settle for bad jump shots. So I think he has to realize that he has a real point guard now, an ascending wing player in RJ, and do what you do inside and let those guys take care of the rest. But that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Getting back into a regular swing now. Preseason is underway, regular season on the way after that. As always, thank you for listening. Please make sure, if you do enjoy the podcast, to subscribe and rate and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You could also catch us on Twitter, where mostly Alex and Rafa. I've been kind of MIA on Twitter lately, but mostly Rafa. Yeah, Rafa's running that. Social media manager, update the bio. Where you can follow us, talk about the games, talk about anything else happening in Knicks land. We're currently sitting at 1,400 followers. Would love to get closer to 1,500 by the regular season tip off. Coming up here in a little over a week. So that's another episode of Worldwide Knicks. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you guys next time.